"A mug of tea," said William. He paused and then ventured, "Is there anything in the other paper?"
"Oh, they're still trying to say that Vetinari didn't do it," said Mr. McElduff. "And the King of Lanka says women of Lanka don't give birth to snakes."
"Well, he would say that, wouldn't he?" said Mrs. Arcanum.
"Vetinari must have done something," said Mr. Windling. "Otherwise, why would he be helping the watch with their inquiries? That's not the action of an innocent man, in my humble opinion."
The best way to describe Mr. Windling would be like this. You're at a meeting. You'd like to be away early, so would everyone else. There really isn't very much to discuss, anyway. And just as everyone can see any other business coming over the horizon and is already putting their papers neatly together, a voice says, "If I can raise a minor matter, Mr. Chairman," and with a horrible wooden feeling in your stomach, you know now that the evening will go on for twice as long, with much referring back to the minutes of earlier meetings. The man who has just said that, and is now sitting there with a smug smile of dedication to the committee process, is as near Mr. Windling as makes no difference. And something that distinguishes the Mr. Windlings of the universe is the term, "in my humble opinion," which they think adds weight to their statements, rather than indicating in reality, these are the mean little views of someone with the social grace of duckweed.
"I believe there's plenty of evidence that throws doubt on his guilt," said William.
"Really?"
said Mr. Windling, making the word suggest that William's opinion was considerably more humble than his.
"Anyway, I understand the guild leaders are meeting today," he sniffed. "It's time for a change. Frankly, we could do with a ruler who is a little more responsive to the views of ordinary people."
William glanced at Mr. Longshaft the dwarf, who was peacefully cutting some toast into soldiers. Perhaps he hadn't noticed. Perhaps there was nothing to notice, and William was being oversensitive. But years of listening to Lord de Word's opinions had given him a certain ear. It told him when phrases like "the views of ordinary people," innocent and worthy in themselves, were being used to mean that somebody should be whipped.
"How do you mean?" he said.
"The city is getting too big," said Mr. Windling. "In the old days the gates were kept shut, not left open to all and sundry, and people could leave their doors unlocked."
"We didn't have anything worth stealing," said Mr. Cartwright.
"That's true. There's more money around," said Mr. Prone.
"It doesn't all stay here, though," said Mr. Windling. That was true, at least. Sending money home was the major export activity of the city, and dwarfs were right at the front of it.
William also knew that most of it came back again, because dwarfs bought from the best dwarf craftsmen, and, mostly, the best dwarf craftsmen worked in Ankh-Morpork these days, and they sent money back home. A tide of gold coins rolled back and forth and seldom had a chance to go cold, but it upset the Windlings of the city. Mr. Longshaft quietly picked up his boiled egg and inserted it into an egg cup.
"There's just too many people in the city," Mr. Windling repeated. "I've nothing against outsiders, heaven knows, but Vetinari let it go too far. Everyone knows we need someone who is prepared to be a little more firm."
There was a metallic noise. Mr. Longshaft, still staring fixedly at his egg, had reached down and drawn a smallish but still impressively axe-like axe from his bag. Watching the egg carefully, as if it was about to run away, he leaned slowly back, paused for a moment, then brought the blade round in an arc of silver. The top of the egg flew up with hardly a noise, turned over in mid-air several feet above the plate, and landed beside the egg cup. Mr. Longshaft nodded to himself, and then looked up at the frozen expressions.
"I'm sorry," he said. "I wasn't listening."
At which point, as Saccharissa would have put it, the meeting broke up. William purchased his own copy of the Inquirer on the way to Gleam Street and wondered, not for the first time, who was writing this stuff. They were better at it than he would be, that was certain. He'd wondered once about making up a few innocent paragraphs when not much was happening in the city, and found that it was a lot harder than it looked. Try as he might, he kept letting common sense and intelligence get the better of him. Besides, telling lies was wrong. He noted glumly that they'd used the talking dog story. Oh, and one he hadn't heard before. A strange figure had been seen swooping around the rooftops of Unseen University at night. Half man, half moth. Half invented and half made up, more likely. The curious thing was, if the breakfast table jury was anything to go by, that denying stories like this only proved that they were true. After all, no one would bother to deny something if it didn't exist, would they? He took a short cut through the stables in Creek Alley. Like Gleam Street, Creek Alley was there to mark the back of places. This part of the city had no real existence other than as a place you passed through to somewhere more interesting. The dull street was made up.